The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And an eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here. When you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Conservative Voice here on WWDB 860 AM. I'm Don Beischel Jr., flying solo today as Joanne is off. And if you want to call in to join the discussion, it's 888-329-3306. So today on our show, we are going to be talking to State Senator and PA gubernatorial candidate Doug Mastriano. And we will also be talking to one of the challengers to Congressman Brian Fitzpatrick. There is, I think, four of them now, but one of them will be on today. It will be a PA first congressional candidate, Caroline Avery. But first off, we're going to start with Senator Doug Mastriano. Senator, thanks for calling in.
Thank you for having me back on. It's great to be here.
It's great to be here, too. I know we took a couple weeks off for different things, but we're back up. We're back on the air, so that's a good thing. What I wanted to talk to you about, because obviously what's going on in current events, and you have a unique perspective of this, because many people may or may not know. I don't think many people know, but you were actually a NATO commander during the Cold War. And so I thought, you know, we could start with that, with the Russian incursion, invasion, illegal action in Ukraine, because you might have a unique perspective of, as you were a NATO intelligence officer, a unique perspective in the mind of Vladimir Putin, because quite honestly, it seems like Putin thinks like the old style Russians, the ones that you were strategizing against. So I just wanted to get your take on what he's doing and what kind of playbook he's running and what we could expect from your knowledge of the situation.
Yeah, I was the senior intel officer in NATO, in the NATO land army headquarters in Germany. Thank you. And in that capacity, obviously, we focused in quite a bit on Russia. Okay. And what's interesting was that, of course, in 2008, we actually had my unit going through at Armenia. Sorry, Georgia to go to Armenia. And that's when Putin, of course, attacked Georgia. So we see parallels what's going on with Ukraine right now.
So obviously you had to strategize against the old-style Soviet Union and what their grand plans were. So do you see a similarity, a parallel to the way Putin is approaching his march? First, as you said, Georgia, then Crimea, and now Ukraine?
Yeah, so just as a point of reference, I was, of course, my first assignment as lieutenant and platoon leader of electronic warfare unit serving on the East German Czechoslovakian borders, was, of course, opposing the Warsaw Pact forces led by the Soviet Russians. And we were told we'd last about 45 minutes if World War III broke out, which is real motivating.
I think you said they called you guys the speed bump, right? I think that's what it was.
It's real motivating. Like, you guys are here to delay the Russians and just to buy a little time to commit the United States with enough of you being dead. We were an all-male unit at the time, the 2nd Cavalry Regiment, a really good unit. But we studied, obviously, very deeply Soviet tactics. And Putin, at the same time that I was there as lieutenant in West Germany, Vladimir Putin was actually a Russian major working in their KGB up in Leipzig, East Germany, near the 8th Guards Tank Army, the same army that we face, and they would roll over us, basically.
So I guess my question is, do you see, knowing the tactics of the type of leader that Putin is, because you obviously had to strategize against those people that thought that way, do you see any diplomatic outcome here in the Ukraine that could possibly prevent an escalation?
Hey, I wonder if we even have that option anymore. So Russian leaders, and especially, you know, macho man like Vladimir Putin, and I'm not denigrating him. Literally, the guy likes to be known as a tiger hunter, as a dude riding around on horseback without a shirt on, you know, as a great judo wrestler.
Right.
So he's Mr. Macho. That's his image anyway. And so the reason why Russia behaved over the past several years is because we had a leader that was strong, and there was no doubt that he'd smack you down if you stepped out of line. That was Donald Trump. So when he comes into office, and when Biden comes into office, he sees our retreat out of Afghanistan. He sees a doddering old man being led around by the hand by his wife. When he sees weakness, when he sees us cutting off our energy sources and becoming reliant upon Russian oil and gas, he saw an opportunity.
And that's the thing that I think people miss. You know, it's funny how the mainstream media called Trump a friend of Putin, when really President Trump actually kept Putin and China in line and other dictatorships around the world, because not that he was ever going to do any kind of invasion, so to speak, against them, but he took the necessary steps to bring them in line, whether it was the tariffs on China, or letting them know that, hey, if you go in here, we're going to do this or do that. It's almost like I've talked to many people about this during the week, and I draw the parallel to what Putin is doing with Biden as to what Adolf Hitler did with Neville Chamberlain, as appeasement, you know, and it actually started with Barack Obama. With the the Georgia Crimea situations, you know, and then back before that. So it just seems like when you give these dictator type people an inch, they say, okay, I got an inch, now I'll take 3 inches, and I'll take 6 inches, and I'll take a yard, and they'll just keep on going until finally, you know, a disaster happens.
Yeah, I mean, as a historian, I tend to be, you know, careful about comparisons over epics. There are analogies, and I agree with you, you know, within the shape of that dictator Adolf Hitler, you know, he seized Austria. There was no impact for that. And then in 1938, he wanted Czechoslovakia. You know, he basically said there's ethnic Germans on the Czechoslovakian-German border in the Sudetenland.
Right.
They were being harassed and persecuted by the Czechs, by the Czechoslovakians. And as a pretense with this ethnic trouble, of course, he wanted that part of Czechoslovakia. So the Western leaders under Neville Chamberlain from the UK, of course, met in Munich. That's right, you heard that right. Munich,
yeah,
where was Kamala Harris? Munich, stupid idea, ignorant of history. And they gave Hitler what he wanted, and he said, I'll just take the borderlands of Czechoslovakia, and I won't go any further. Well, he took the whole country. And so when Hitler saw that, he goes, I'm going to take Poland next. You know, screw that. And that's when the Allies finally declared war. Well, they declared war and did nothing until Hitler, you know, invaded France next. And so with that kind of weakness, this appeasement policy, we do see, you know, some chilling comparisons in the form of what happened, you know, with Georgia, now with Ukraine. Putin hasn't forgotten. Go ahead.
You know, the funny thing is, I say to people, you know, history provides a blueprint and a map.
Yep.
So you were also part of history by stopping Saddam Hussein from basically doing what Putin is doing now. In other words, you were the you led the force that attacked from Kuwait into Iraq to stop Saddam Hussein from basically going, you know, to liberate Kuwait, and basically he would have kept on going into Saudi Arabia and so forth and so on. So that's why I really wanted to talk to you about this, because you have a unique perspective of all of this. You know, you were there, NATO, you know, with the Russians before, and then you were also there when actually, you know, we actually took the steps to stop another dictator from basically going forward and doing the things that, you know, dictators love to do.
And that was part of the calculus under, you know, George Herbert Walker Bush, you know, the elder, was that that generation grew up with appeasement, and they never wanted to repeat that again. And they saw a lapse on their Truman, of course, with the Korean War.
Right.
Like, we got to really be careful about this appeasement thing. And so that was the argument. Saddam Hussein invades Kuwait, which we had no defense treaty with. But we came to the rescue because of oil, and that Saddam Hussein was poised to strike into Saudi Arabia, eastern Saudi Arabia, and he'd be controlling at that time 1/3 of the world's reserves that were being produced. And then he could control prices and dominate the world. And as a result of that economic concern, we went to war. And that's the way you fight a war, overwhelming force. These were all the Desert Storm 31 years ago this past month. That was all the lessons learned from Vietnam. And we applied it. We had a great victory. Liberated Kuwait, drove the tyrant out of Kuwait, and restored the status quo. But then what happened in 2002 and 2003, we unlearned all those lessons. And shame on Rumsfeld, you know, who was our Secretary of Defense, who went through the Vietnam era, saw how bad McNamara, the Secretary of Defense under Johnson, managed that war, and repeated all the mistakes we had learned from and then, you know, unlearned from in 2002, 2003 by incrementalism and what have you.
Well, and the real thing, you know, you touched on it a little earlier when you said about the withdrawal from Afghanistan and stuff like that. You know, a lot of times things that happen give a perception to people that look at it to take an advantage of it. And so consequently, that's what Putin sees. He sees the fact that, you know, we have a president that, you know, I'm trying not to be disrespectful, but sometimes I wonder if he knows what day it is. And then on top of that, you know, the bungling withdrawal from Afghanistan made us look like we were incompetent. And what I'm really afraid of is this sends a message to China, you know, with our treaty with Taiwan. And then, of course, it sends a message to Iran, you know, and their development of a nuclear weapon. There's consequences for action or lack thereof or what you do.
Yep, and I think you're right. And, you know, we have a terrible situation in Ukraine, but we need to keep an eye on China. China and Russia are more closely aligned than they have been since when Nixon visited, in 74. And so this is a dangerous trend. China is getting its oil and gas from Russia. They worked out a sweet deal with Russia to fuel their economy and their industry. But China has its eyes on Taiwan, and we do have a defense treaty. We have six defense treaties in the Pacific Ocean, and one of the six is with Taiwan. So if war happens there, we're going to war. For Ukraine, you know, if we are going to – I've been to war, you know, several times, and I'm no hero, but I served with heroes. But at some point, why are we here? What is the end game? And we have to decide, you know, in Ukraine, is it in the United States' national interests, our strategic national interests, to go to war over Ukraine? I'm not convinced of that, but if our NATO allies are attacked, we're at war. And how Russia is going to do that, I think the most vulnerable place in NATO, in my studies, and this is my assessment, it's not classified, it's my assessment, and it could be wrong, but is in the eastern Latvia. And I spent time in eastern Latvia, and 90% of the people there are ethnic Russians. They're either they served in the Red Army or intel agencies, or they're the sons and daughters of cold warriors. And they're receiving, many of the people, they receive between 200 euros and 1,000 euros a month stipend from Moscow because of their retirement pay working for the Red Army. And so they're very sympathetic to Russia and Moscow.
Well, what
how Putin...
Go ahead.
No, how Putin would stir trouble in NATO is that he would just stir up the ethnic Russians. He doesn't have to send his troops in. And then, of course, the Latvians would have to respond, and there'd be bloodshed, and then, you know, there'll be chaos. And then, you know, I'm going to send my troops in there just to bring law and order and bring things that, you know, address the humanitarian crisis. But I'll leave when it's over. And then he never leaves. And without firing a shot, he takes a chunk of a NATO country.
Well, I'm sorry. Good. Go ahead.
No, but that's what he did in Georgia and Ukraine as well in some ways.
Well, I see I see the strategy of what he's doing in the south of Ukraine by basically taking those port cities and basically completing that land bridge so he doesn't have to go around where, you know, through Crimea. And then he could actually, if he wanted to, he could send ground troops and tanks and armor that way over over basically through the land and over to where you're talking about. So, I mean, I see the strategy of how you're connecting the dots there.
Yeah, and you put it right. So you think about Ukraine, they're in a bad way because, of course, Belarus is, you know, helping the Russians up on the northern border.
Right.
Of course, we have the eastern border with Russia and then the southern border with Russia because they annexed Crimea. I don't recognize that, but the fact that it's Russian territory. They're being attacked on three flanks, and still they're able to hold off this onslaught. If they can hold off and keep the Russians at bay for several months, I think the tide will turn. Right now, we've already heard about 5,000 Russians have been arrested in Moscow for protesting this war here. And this is only a week old now.
Right.
So if Ukrainians can keep holding the line, So as far as direct military involvement, I'm not convinced that we ought to, but I'm not opposed to providing the Ukrainian army with defensive weapons such as Javelin anti-tank missiles and Stinger anti-aircraft missiles.
Senator, this is the other historical geek.
What's up, brother?
It's Stan. You know, one of the things that it seems to be lacking in most liberal progressive governments is this concept of strategic thinking. And which I give a lot of credit to Trump's people that he had, Pompeo, thinking strategically. The history of the world is really based on two things, economic power and military power, whether perceived or actual. And once you lose those two ingredients, the bullies come out to play, and that's what you see. The other thing that's really interesting is that the Russians and the Chinese know how to get to American politicians, and that is to buy them off, to prevent them from thinking strategically. And what you see is, if you look at the history of warfare and the battles that we fought, every war that we have gotten into, except for, and I'll still give credit to Clinton for that, it has been because we've had progressive liberal governments along the way that forget to think strategically. So, and I think that's one of the biggest faults that we have. And having you as governor of Pennsylvania one day, I know you will think strategically about how to handle all problems, including the need for us to be energy independent and to also deal with the green economy that is eventually happening, but doggone it is costing the strategic unplanning of how to switch to that is going to be costing Americans thousands and thousands of dollars each household with inflation, the most insidious tax. And I think it's important for people to understand your strategic thinking on all of those aspects of it.
Well, I do appreciate that. I one of my master's, of course, is in strategic studies, and then I have a master's in strategic intelligence. So I would have never imagined how useful those fields would be in what I'm doing now and what I'm going to be doing as governor, obviously. But you think about this from a global perspective, Pennsylvania, we should be an energy house. We should be exporting liquefied natural gas around the world. We should be able to sustain our own economy. You know, we were just 2 years ago, we were energy independent as a nation, the United States. And now we're importing, I'm going to repeat this, now we're importing 600 million barrels a year from Russia. What are we, nuts? The Keystone Pipeline alone would have brought in 800 million barrels a year. That's 200 million more barrels than we're getting from Russia. We should not be paying or buying any Russian oil and gas. That is madness. And this is the reason why Vladimir Putin feels so empowered. First off, he has a single commodity economy, basically, oil and gas, about $70 billion a year. And now that oil prices are over $100 a barrel, I mean, this is fantastic for him. He's making money while he's fighting a war. Yeah. You know, when does that ever happen? You know, under Donald Trump, it was as low as $35 a barrel, and it was so bad that his economy was breaking, and he could not modernize his army. That's why his army is doing so terrible, even though they have every advantage.
Well, let's jump into that on the economic side of the thing, because one of the things that Putin did in the very beginning before he did it is he pulled all the oligarchs in and had a meeting with them. And obviously, I'm sure the part of that meeting was, you know, about what was going to be come from the sanctions that were going to be imposed by the West. Now, there's rumblings that the oligarchs are grousing because it seems to be hitting the Russian economy quicker than I think even Putin thought it was going to. And the people are starting to rally against, you know, what's happening to them economically. So my question to you, knowing the Russian mind like you do from when you were in NATO, do you think that because we waited to impose these sanctions, that it will have any impact on Putin's military plans of taking Ukraine?
Had we done this before, you know, well before, and I've talked about it, had the Biden administration not approved Nord Stream 2 and you know, and give Russia more access to control Germany with oil and gas, I don't know. At this point here, it just depends on it. I think everything's going to be hinged upon how long the Ukrainians can hold on. If the Ukrainian army can hold on for several months, I think it's going to start breaking Russia's economic power. and then the oligarchs might start caving to public to pressure. I won't say public pressure, but economic pressure. If Putin could win this war, whatever his goal is, I think his goal is to annex the eastern third of Ukraine. If he can do that in the next couple of weeks, he'll weather the storm and come out. I do believe Putin, you know, knew this eventuality with economic sanctions would come against him. So I think as far as he and his oligarchs, they can hang on for a little while. But time will tell. We've already had 5,000 people arrested in Moscow for protesting against the war. So that's shocking me that so quickly there's opposition already.
You know, I wanted to talk about the economics of Pennsylvania a little bit because I know because you strategically think about it. When you think about Pennsylvania's economy prior to Wolf getting in and destroying the economy of Pennsylvania, we would be considered one of the largest economies of the world. And by having Pennsylvania as a keystone state, having its economy roaring with energy, with development, with manufacturing, and all the things we do here, we have a great ability to control the aspects of what happens in the world. And it is such a shame that we squander this every time. Kevin Hassar, who was the economist for Trump, he was a chairman of the economic President's Economic Board, wrote a book, and it's called "The Slide: Stopping the Slide Toward American Socialism." And he has a quote in there. I forget who did the quote, but he talks about how the capitalistic system has created the greatest economic benefit to its people through its free markets and free expression and free ideas. But it always seems to be that in human needs, that also born or also spurs the development of those who want to destroy it. And because they're born into this system, and when you think of Engels and Karl Marx and all these socialist people, they were all from wealthy families, and they didn't accept it. It seems like that is the typical liberal. They just can't be ever happy with anything. They can't do more of what's working and less of what doesn't work. And it's such a tragedy that this happens. So economically, as you think strategically about Pennsylvania's position economically as governor, what would be the things that you could do within a legislator that works, a House and Senate that we'd be working with you because we're going to whip butt this fall? How are you going to grasp that and make Pennsylvania economically one of the soundest economies in the United States?
Yeah, it's really not that hard. And I'll hit some of my key points in a second here. But if we were in an independent nation, Pennsylvania would be the eighth strongest economy in the world. And I don't feel like it that we are. I look around and I see our roads and bridges. And, you know, we were told by the Republicans in 2015, before Wolf, this gas tax that you're paying, you know, a lot of money on it. It's like a second or third highest in the nation now. I think Illinois and California now beat us out. But just pass this gas tax one time and our roads and bridges will be fixed and will be great and be fantastic. You know, and you just can't make this crap up. You know, the bridge falling in Pittsburgh right before the, you know, Biden visits. It's like, seriously, when you're driving around the state, I'm close to the Maryland border. And I know when I'm in Maryland because the roads are quieter and not so bumpy. And I hear the excuses from PennDOT, oh, but our winters are worse and we have more roads, but we're paying a lot more into it too, fellas. So, I actually had, you know, some of the reps from PennDOT in to try to convince me that we should have another increase to the gas tax. I'm like, you know what? This conversation's over. Just leave. You know, I'm like, how can you guys say that? Well, people are carpooling more and their cars are more gas efficient. I'm like, just stop. You manage the money you're getting in. You're getting too much as it is. You know, 40% of that money for the gas tax doesn't even go to roads or bridges. It goes, you know, to a retirement fund. This is sick. So on day one, I'm gonna save us $461 million on day one with a stroke of a pen. I'm going to pull us out of the regional greenhouse gas initiative that Tom Wolf unilaterally put us into. And that's costing us $461 million a year. You know, Democrats, with all their great ideas, they do nothing but destroy families, and they really hit the lower and middle income families the most. And so day one, that's it. Day one as well, opening up the lands, and we're gonna become, right now we're number two in gas producer. We're going to be number one by the end of my first year, if it's possible, with infrastructure. And so why does that matter? Well, you have to roll back some of the regulations, some of the fees, the extraction fees, taxes that Tom Wolf put on the industry. And why does that matter? We're going to bring all that money to here. And instead of buying 600 million barrels of oil a year from Russia, We're going to provide energy to New England and to the Mid-Atlantic states, and maybe even export it to our NATO allies in Lithuania, who the former Minister of Defense looked me in the eye and said she wanted to buy Pennsylvania natural gas and not Russian and not Norwegian, but she wanted it from us, and just get it to me and we'll buy it.
I tell you, you're getting me so turned on talking about this. You have no idea. Oh, I love talk like this. Oh, my God.
So let me ask you this question, because this is one of the things that I wanted to get into a little bit. So say you prevail in November, which I believe you will,
Wait, before you get into that, I just want our listeners to understand that on April 8th, we're going to make this announcement today, both in the first hour and the second hour, that the senator is receiving the Phyllis Schlafly Voter Integrity Award, along with General Flynn, who will be receiving Phyllis Schlafly Freedom Award, and it is such an honor. I tell you what, we haven't even advertised it yet, and the invitation, we've already sold tables. We are already there. People want to meet you and want to meet General Flynn, two real American heroes. So it is an honor for me to have that award for you and everything that you've done to fight the fight for America. So I just wanted to make that announcement.
Yeah,
Don's been real involved in this thing. We've been talking every night. So we this is going to be big.
He was in Florida talking to me up here, you know. So he's
in the
sun. He's in the sun, and I'm down there. I'm up here freezing to death. But that's besides the point.
But that's the way it should be.
Smart man.
Yes.
Right.
So when you're in the governor's mansion, and say this is still going on, is there any Pennsylvania investments in Russian and things, because obviously we have a gigantic Ukrainian population in Pennsylvania, and also Russians that are not sympathetic to Putin. So from a gubernatorial standpoint, from an executive standpoint, is there any, and I don't know, so I'm asking you, is there anything from a governor standpoint you could do, or you could ask the Treasury to do, you know, of
that? Pennsylvania, we have investments around the world, and we have millions of dollars in China, and I actually have legislation to end that. And we have about $300 million, last I checked, invested in Russia. Obviously, we need to immediately pull that money out of there. Why are we investing in these kind of regimes? Why don't we invest in allies and friends like Poland or something?
Right.
And so
in America.
Thank you. Even better. Invest in our own people. Imagine that. Have somebody who actually cares about our country. But, you know, so $300 million needs to come home. You know, as far as aid, military, we can't do that. That's a federal issue.
Right.
But obviously sending over humanitarian assistance is not a big deal. And we can go through, you know, NGOs in that case.
So I think that's the importance of people to realize that when you have somebody that has had military global experience like you had, and you understand the adversaries and the players of around the world, that even though we are one of 50 states, there are things we can do to advance American freedom around the world and for other people that want to have that same freedom.
We are tied in closely with Lithuania. We have a state partnership with Lithuania. The guards of all the states have a partner, mostly in Europe. So Lithuania, and who would have known when I was in the Army, you know, my area would be, of course, largely the Baltic nations of Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. And there is a lot of promise there. We have Lithuanian troops training in our state today. We have Pennsylvanian troops in the 28th Division and the Air Guard serving over in Lithuania. And so we are tied in. And as an energy-producing state, we had this golden opportunity. You know, Stan and I were in Florida there for CPAC there, and how great it was to be in a freedom state with a governor that has a little bit of kahunas, who's not afraid to stand up there to the media.
Did you see that Governor DeSantis yesterday when the college kids were up there, and he turned around and he said, to
yes.
them, take those masks, the COVID theater. It's time to end the COVID theater.
Better yet is you go into these stores and supermarkets, and they've got pictures on the wall, which basically take that mask off. We if you want to wear a mask, don't come in.
I just was like so proud to see Governor DeSantis do what he did yesterday, and it was great to see the media, liberal media's, their heads exploding because that's all they were talking about.
Yeah, I had lunch with somebody on his business. He has, if you're liberal, don't come in. I mean, this is in Florida. It's unbelievable. It's because there's more of us than there are of them.
Yes, there is. Yes. And, you know, and I agree with Tucker Carlson. People alone in their cars with a mask on is a sure sign of mental illness.
That's exactly right.
Well, Senator, before you go, I just wanted to announce to everybody, obviously, that you will be in the Delaware County tomorrow night at the ballroom at the Phoenix starting at 5 o'clock. So if you guys want to hear the senator talk about anything, whether it's his plans for Pennsylvania's future or the Ukrainian crisis or anything like that, please go to the website, dougforgov.com. You can get tickets there. I think they're still available. There's a few still available. But we'll be seeing you tomorrow night, Senator.
Yep.
Thank you. And Valley Forge with the truck.
Oh, yeah, you'll be at Valley Forge at the truck rally. You'll be speaking, what, about 3:30, I think it is, or 3:20?
Yep, exactly.
Yep. So you'll be there for that also as well. And we'll see you next week.
Thank you, gentlemen. God bless.
And we'll see you.
Thank you.
Take care. Have a great night. Okay, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to have on Caroline Avery. She is one of the four challengers who is running in the primary against Brian Fitzpatrick in Pennsylvania's 1st Congressional District. I'm Don Beischel Jr. here with Stan Casaccio, and this is a Conservative Voice here on WWDB 860 AM.
Hi, this is Don from the Conservative Voice. Are you looking for new business cards? Need new menus for your restaurant? Signs old and outdated? Employees need new shirts? Cars, trucks, and vans need new signage? Look no further than Mann Custom Wear. Located at 2250 State Road in Bensalem, Pennsylvania, Mann Custom Wear can fill all those needs and much more. At Mann Custom Wear, the owner, Mark, takes great pride in providing his customers with a superior product that is sure to catch the eye of potential customers and wow your existing clients. So if you're looking for a change, if you're looking to increase business and visibility, reach out to Mark at Mann Custom Wear. He can be reached at 215-651-8932, by email at markcolt45@hotmail.com, or on the web at www.mancustomwear.com. Mann Custom Wear, your one-stop shop for all your design and printing needs.
And welcome back to the Conservative Voice here on WWDB 860 AM. I'm Don Beischel Jr. here along with Stan Casaccio. And if you want to call in, the number is 888-329-3306. So our next guest is a woman who is looking to unseat Brian Fitzpatrick in PA's 1st Congressional District, one of the true conservatives that are running in the race. And last time she was on, unfortunately, I was out with COVID, so we did have some people filling in with her. But I'm here now, and we have on Caroline Avery. Caroline, welcome.
Hello, Dawn, and thank you. And I'm so glad you're over your illness and that you get to be on the show today.
Yeah, well, the illness that supposedly everybody was supposed to die from, I've had it twice. Somehow I'm still living. I don't know.
Because you got me as a friend. That's why.
And I want to say hello to Joanne. Is Joanne there today?
No, she's off today.
You all can't get together for me now.
Yeah. Well, she was in Scotland and London last week.
Nice.
Doing some seminars for her business, mm-hmm. And so this week she's back, and obviously she's spending time with her kids. So. So anyway,
I'm Scottish.
Family comes first.
Absolutely. She's like me. I'm Scottish, so definitely.
You're the guys that thought up this game of golf that drives me crazy. Only a Scotman could figure that game up. You know.
I love this show.
Thank you. So Caroline, one of the things we were talking about with Senator Mastriano earlier, and since you're running for federal office, I really want to talk about this. Obviously, you're aware of the Russian-Ukrainian mess that's going on and the mess that the Biden administration and Democrats have made of our foreign policy. So I wanted to get your take on this as someone who is running for Congress, and should you prevail and become our next congresswoman from Pennsylvania's 1st Congressional District, what would be your take on, A, what's going on, And B, what would you like to see us do about it as far as nothing, economic sanctions, no-fly zone? What exactly would be your initial thought and actions as a congresswoman?
Well, here we go. You know, the good news is, as a world explorer, and that's what I am, I'm not a vacationer, I'm a world explorer. So I've been around the world, and I've been to many countries. And so I am very aware, and I understand the landscape of our world and the condition that it's in. And I'm connected worldwide. And I don't mean just by the internet. These are people that I know in different countries. So I get information, real information, like what's happening, you know, how are they feeling and this, that, and the other. And what is their look on it? Because, you know, sadly, we can't always depend on our own sources here in this country to tell us the truth, can we?
No,
you mean
we certainly
can't depend on CNN? I just can't believe the fake news.
Yeah.
So the good news is I do have foreign, you know, I have experience in that. And that would be one of the things that I'd be very interested in when I get in Washington, D.C., a committee that I'd be interested in, because I'm a human rights activist, or not even an activist, an advocate. And so to answer your question, Ukraine, yeah, it's tragic, it's atrocious, it's a human rights offense, and it was completely avoidable.
So, by avoidable, I think you probably agree with our assessment here that the sanctions that the Biden administration put on were too little, too late. It should have been actually done before this invasion even started.
Well, I mean, he's an opportunist.
Right.
You know, they all are. You know, he's dastardly in his deeds and his actions. We know that about him. And let's just face it, we have to speak the truth, and that's it. I'm speaking the truth. This would have never happened had we had Donald Trump or Ronald Reagan or a common sense president.
You know, Carolyn, just adding to that, I was having dinner down in Florida when I wasn't getting my tan or playing golf and then hitting, breaking clubs over the tree. And we were talking about Donald Trump and his dealings with some of the mob and things like that in New York. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's a whole story if people want to see it there. I think Netflix or one of them has a story about that. So Donald Trump's been used to dealing with mobsters and hatchet guys. And, you know, when you see a picture of Putin and Xi in suits, they're wearing suits, but they are ruthless people, just like the mob used to wear suits. And they were ruthless. And just like the mob, once you're in their organization, there's only one way you get out of it. So you needed someone like a Donald Trump who's dealt with these type of people all the time. And people say, he used to say how smart Putin was. Well, darn it, Putin's a hell of a lot smarter than Biden, I'll tell you that much at this juncture.
Well, don't ever estimate Putin's intelligence.
No,
ever.
He's extremely... Go ahead.
It would be wildly unwise. Only a foolish person would underestimate.
Yes. So what would you, what would be one of the things that you would like to see the administration do? If you were in Congress and you wanted to
quit.
I'd like to see him quit too.
Yeah, that'd be great.
But unfortunately, we got to deal with that for another two and a half years. So you're looking to get elected in November. So hopefully we should take the House and the Senate back. So you guys will have a chance.
If everybody goes out and votes to overcome the Democrats rigging elections, that's another story.
Mm-hmm. But you guys will have a chance to introduce some legislation. So what would you like to see?
Okay. We've got to get the right people in a seat, that's for sure. And I would be one of the right people. I was in professional sports and horse racing, and I've traveled the world, like I said. I've met people in Central America, mercenaries in Central America, that had more integrity than some of the people that are elected in Washington.
I will not argue that point.
So you're talking to a woman who has actual experience and has dealt with unsavory people in her life, and that has gone toe to toe, and they have actually said, let's just call it a draw.
So this is
good news for us. So we have to look at it for what it is. Okay. We have to ask ourselves questions, because I'm not, when I am going to be a representative for other people. The last thing I'm going to do is run around and say hasty things.
Right.
So what I have to do is I have to look at what's happening. What is happening? Okay. And what's happening is we're seeing a full-on war that could have been avoided. Okay. But we have to ask ourselves, why is it happening? Okay. Because we have to do that, right?
Yes.
And then we have to, okay. So we ask ourselves, why is it happening? Well, it's always happening because of the same reasons that it has been since the beginning of the time. Power, money, terrain, and world dominance.
Well, that seems to be the Russian playbook, and what motivates them. And so obviously,
well,
and I like what you're saying, because quite honestly, I think too often we as politicians have knee-jerk reactions instead of taking a moment to take a breath and to analyze the situation. And I believe that's what you're basically talking about here.
Yes, sir. So we want to ask questions because, you know, we want to ask questions. So now the next question is, you know, who is allowing this and why? I mean, who is allowing this and why? So you have to always, Don, go back to your basic thing. This has been going on since the beginning of time, since there was more than one family. Why is it happening and who's allowing it to happen? So the Biden administration is obviously allowing this to happen. So what do we have to do? You know, we have to take an inventory and we have to always follow the money and the corruption. So that we look at that, you know, we take that apart, you know, take it little piecemeals. And so we start to look at things like Nord Stream, you know, Burisma, Hunter Biden.
Yes.
Why is he allowing this? You know, is he allowing it because, you know, and we know that the Pelosi's have, you know, ties in there. We know that Ukraine, you know, even though the Ukrainian people are suffering terribly and they are good people, and so are many of the Russian people.
Yes.
The small people that are in the power, they don't care about these, they don't care about their own people. And just like it is here in our country, we see our leaders taking care of a small group of people where there is, you know, a large group of people that aren't being taken care of. So are they allowing this to happen because if they don't, they'll, you know, be able to find the corruption in Burisma and the, you know, the connection between Hunter and this and that and the other. So then we have to ask ourselves, because we have to ask these questions. When you ask questions, it's easier to get other people to come into agreement with you, number one, and it's easier to get people to take a look at the entire landscape. Instead of acting hysterical and running around and screaming, oh, I'm from here, and oh, I know what they're doing, and wag the dog. All this stuff, none of that's effective. All of it's understandable, but it's not effective.
Well,
so what we have to...
I was just going to jump in because I think you made a good point here that by all this happening, it actually takes the focus off of the possibility of tracing things back, whether it would be to Hunter Biden or the Biden administration or being able to investigate Burisma and all that, and to basically, because now you have this incursion war going on that everybody is focused on that, and somehow we lose focus. And you're right in the aspect of you follow the money, and that usually takes you to the answer that you're looking for.
Follow the money and the corruption.
Yes.
You got to follow the money and the corruption. And, you know, the ego and the sin is the ultimate thing, you know, at the bottom line there, you know. So, and then we have to ask ourselves another question, Don. We have to ask the other question. This is what common sense people, this is what problem solvers do. Brian Fitzpatrick, I'm sorry to say this, but he's the problem maker.
Right.
I'm a problem solver. And so we ask ourselves, who benefits from this? Like, who benefits from this whole S-storm, okay? So maybe I'm just going to, these are questions I'm throwing out there. So maybe we can take a look at this. So who benefits? Because you have to ask the why, the who, the how come, or the what, and the who benefits, okay? So who benefits? Could it be maybe the World Economic Forum? The globalist World Economic Forum? It's certainly not me. It's certainly not you.
Right. Well, yeah.
Companies?
Mm-hmm.
China? I mean, these are the beneficiaries of this hot mess that's just a human rights offense.
Well, that's one of the things that Stan and I always say, you know, when you boil it down, if you always follow the trail of money and who's benefiting from certain things, it's one of the things that when we were talking about Senator Mastriano earlier And he was saying, isn't it interesting that Putin is fighting a war, but he's making huge amounts of money on oil at the same time?
Well, I don't think he's the only one making huge
money. Oh, I don't think so either.
But, you know,
sadly. Now,
Carolyn, you know, one of the interesting things about economics and everything, you know, people are bad-mouthing the oil companies and things like, and prices going up. I just paid $5 a gallon for gas. And it's just absolutely insane when you think 2 years ago we were paying two something and people are lambasting the oil companies. But you have to remember, supply and demand is what drives the marketplace. So if you cut supply and the demand goes up, then the prices go up. And if you remember, we've had a few attempts on trying to control pricing and things like that, and they fall into dismal failure because ultimately the companies don't supply stuff, and then they go into the underground economy, which is usually
or in the hands of the receiver.
So for all practical purposes, again, as I said to Senator Mastriano, we have to think strategically. But I wanted to talk about a little bit about Brian, who Don and I both know fairly well. One thing about Brian is he always has an answer.
Yeah,
he's very good. Well, even when he starts talking, and I've said to Brian, I said, Brian, you are assuming that Democrats will vote for you, and maybe he does get a few Democratic votes, but in 2 seconds they would throw him out in a minute. So why give up your integrity by supporting these things against Trump and stuff like that? I say, be consistent. So one of the things that I look for my congressional representative, someone who is consistent, who speaks their heart and not talking points, who really understands the relationship between the world and how we can do things better and to do more of what has worked in the past and what hasn't worked, do less of what hasn't worked in the past. So from your heart, if I were to say, who is Carolyn Avery? Without
Caroline.
Any talking points.
Caroline. Yeah.
Caroline.
Yeah, Caroline, we don't know her.
Yeah, I'm
Caroline,
sorry.
We don't know her.
I meant to say that's Caroline, okay. I'm sorry. It's because one of my good friends' name is Carolyn.
That's
okay. So anyhow, so who are you as a person? What is your deep feelings about things with no talking points, if you can do that? I think that's important for people to know.
Absolutely. Okay, I can pretty much sum up who I am in a deep-hearted way in pretty much one paragraph. Okay, so this tells you pretty much all about me, the type of person I am. My favorite book is the Holy Bible. I don't preach God or the Bible to anybody because you'll know them by their fruit. Anybody who knows that knows that. My heroines are Crystal Lynn Sutton. Do you know who that is?
No, but I'm going to find out.
Do you, Don?
No, I do not.
Crystal Lynn Sutton is Norma Rae, was Norma Rae.
Oh, okay.
I'm America's Norma Rae. America needs a Norma Rae. America deserves a Norma Rae. Norma Rae died poor, but she didn't die broke because what she did was a really good thing for this country and her state and the workers. She did it because it was right. Another one of my heroines are Lara Logan, and that's for the obvious reason. She stays true to herself, true to the truth. She talks truth to power, and that's who you get when you get me.
She's very impressive, Laura Logan. Yes, she is.
She follows me on Twitter, and I am quite proud of that. You're also getting a person who knows how it feels to be on both sides of a paycheck. I've been a business owner, and I've been an employee, and I know how it feels to get blisters, and I know how it feels to get the life squeezed out of me with taxes. I am, although I have many trade skills, and I do, I'm most proud of being a wife because that is based on love, where the other trade skills were based on monetary things like paying bills and buying food and things like that. I'm right-minded about money. This is a big deal. I am right-minded about money. I was taught long ago that if a man gets his mind straight about money, then almost everything else will work out in their life. That is true. Proven to be true to me. I'm a lioness for our republic. I'm an absolute lioness for our republic, and I go toe-to-toe with anyone. So this is who Caroline is in the short version. This is the condensed version of what I would imagine that the voter who would be casting a ballot, or at this time I'm asking for signatures, would want to know in the short version. There's, you know, I'm right. multifaceted, but I hope that answers, or, you know.
Oh, no, I think that's a good synopsis of, because one of the things we like to do is let people know what kind of person you are. Mm-hmm. Too often we're electing people on talking points or 30-second mm-hmm. sound bites or something like that. So one of the things we like to do on the show when we have people on is we want them to get to know you, the person. What is it that you like to do? And you just summed it up. I mean, just talking about Laura Logan, I watch her a lot, and I think, you know, like you said, she speaks the truth, whether it's the truth that you think you want to see.
Nobody owns me.
Yeah, exactly.
Nobody owns me, and let me tell you. They have all tried in this month during this race. I have seen some things, and I have managed to stay clear of being slimed. And I'm quite proud of that, because no matter what's going on, I know that I have passed the test of all tests. I mean, this has been a real crazy process. So,
Yeah, one thing I've noticed as I've been watching the race, and I've had three of yous on the show. I haven't had the guy that jumped in late on, and I don't know too much about him. We're researching him now. But one thing I've noticed about you is that you have not gone down the negative road. I mean, I haven't seen much of you say anything nasty against any of your other opponents. I mean, you, even when you're speaking about Brian Fitzpatrick, you've stuck to the issues, and you've talked about his failings on certain votes that he's done, because obviously I know you have a conservative, you believe in conservative values and principles. Mm-hmm. So I guess my question to you is this. If it came down to making a vote that would either cost you the election or be beneficial to the people, where would you go?
Oh, I would have to go with, I have to go with the people.
Okay. Because sometimes I think...
Well, wait, let me make sure I got the question right.
You got it right.
Okay.
Yeah, because too often we have found that a lot of politicians compromise their values and principles out of the fear of getting reelected. And
can I?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'd like to interject, because with me, it wouldn't cost me the election. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm right-minded. I'm on the right side of history. I believe that I'm the truest American First candidate. And any vote that came to me, I think we've gone down a path that we might be going up.
Right.
We might be recovering.
Well, one of the issues I always have with Brian, and I have said this to him, is that because when you talk to him privately, he'll say one thing, but then when it comes down to a vote, he goes in an entirely mm-hmm. different direction. And so one of the things he'll say to me is, well, you know, we can't win unless we have these Democratic votes. And one of the things that Stan and I always talk about is, it seems to me, and if you agree with this, please tell me, but it seems to me that it's always us conservatives that are compromising to the Democrats instead of the Democrats compromising to us. And that's, to me, is the biggest fallacy right now in American politics from a conservative Republican standpoint. We're always moving left. They're never moving right.
Well, that's because the way that I've seen it throughout my life, we can almost base it on right-minded and righteousness, and maybe not so much. As I remember being in the very highly competitive sports world business, and I found myself constantly trying to get along, because, you know, it's just easier and life is easier to get along.
Right.
But I found that these people's morals were so bad and they were so wrongheaded, and it didn't really matter how much I bent myself in a pretzel. They were going to continue on either not liking me or not doing the right thing and breaking what I would call just basic cardinal rules, you know, honesty
right.
in business and honesty and excellence and in your service and stuff. That I finally decided, guess what? I'm not going to do that anymore. So I just didn't. And it, you know, did it make me very popular with them? No, but look at, consider the source. So yes, you're absolutely right. And we have to stop doing that because that's weak. It's weakness.
Well, it's like Stan said, you know, in the end, if those Democratic voters would throw Brian or anybody under the bus if they had the chance to do so. So to me, this is a perfect example. It's a smaller version of what's happening on the world stage with Russia and Putin. In other words, when you constantly give in, when you constantly practice appeasement, eventually you lose who you are or who you thought you were.
Yes, you certainly do, and that's not a good thing at all. That's a big price to pay. But see, the thing is when Brian's doing this because he thinks this way or that way, he said things like, you know, I had to sacrifice pawns for seat at the table. Well, who are the pawns? First of all, we'd like to know who those people are. And the thing is he's really not, he's not really, you know, selling himself out. Who is he really selling out? He's selling us out.
Yes. Well, you know,
he has to make his own bones for that.
Well, it's much broader than that even. And I've said this before, the Constitution of America it's just a piece of paper. It has no guns, doesn't come with guns, tanks, bombers, or anything else like that. It's just a piece of paper. The only thing that makes it exist is the integrity and honor and the ability to love the country that you're in that makes it exist. So if you have no integrity, if you have no honor, and if you don't love this country, that Constitution is a barrier to what you want to do, and you will do everything to destroy it. So it's all about the integrity. And when you do votes like that, I think it harms, I know it harms your integrity. You should be free. You should be strong enough to state who you are, what you believe in. And if you can't sell that product, then that's shame on you. But we have a great product to sell. Common sense conservatism is a great product to sell because it works, and we know it works.
I know how to work it. And that's the good news, is I actually know how to work it. I'm 60 years old, and that actually does count for something. My feet have touched the soil of every state in this union, including Hawaii, but except Alaska, and more than one time. I know this state, this country. I know the people in it. I know it from I know what it feels like to have nothing, and I know what it feels like to have a lot. And I know the pains, and I care about people. We have to. Would you mind if we moved into a little bit of what's going on?
Well, unfortunately, Caroline, we're up against it. We're out of time for this segment of the show, but we'd like to have you on again. I just want to let everybody know that Caroline is running in the Pennsylvania 1st Congressional District, which is all of Bucks County and parts of Montgomery County.
Yes.
Yep.
The new parts,
the map keeps changing. So look her up on Google, Caroline Avery for Congress. And thank you, everybody. Thank you, Caroline, for being on. And we'll see you next week on The Conservative Voice here on WWDB 860 AM. Thanks a lot, guys. See you next week.